Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and an AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts are available also at that same website under local programming, Your Financial Choices. Today is September 11th, 2019, and we are thinking of those events 18 years ago. So our thoughts are with those folks who still have to think of that every single day. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 27,137, the NASDAQ at 8,169, and the S&P at 3,000. Our topic tonight is year-end tax planning before the end of the year. So year-end tax planning before year-end. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. Answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. While I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live with me on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So year-end planning before the year-end, that's the best time to do it. Remember, I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. There's not always a lot you could do about it after the end of the year. So, you know, we're filing tax returns for 2019, you know, between January and April. And people say, oh, what can you do to help me save taxes? Well, we should have been talking about that in 2019. So this is, you know, still giving you an opportunity to look and see what your situation is and see what you can do about it. So basically, planning can involve, you know, taking advantage of tax brackets, making sure you have your taxes paid, or to give you an idea of how much you might owe. So when we talk about taking advantage of tax brackets, it could mean accelerating the recognition of income on your tax return sooner than you might have thought. Because that income will be taxed lower now than in the future. So that's what we talk about when we're saying, you know, take advantage of tax brackets. Or conversely, deferring income into future years if you're in a higher tax bracket today in the hopes of lower tax brackets in the future. So let me just kind of say that one more time. Tax planning, if what we're trying to do there is play the tax bracket such that if someone is in a very low tax bracket today and we might expect them to be in a higher bracket in the future, and that could be various reasons we'll talk about later. So if I think I'm going to be in a really low tax bracket, it might make sense to put income on the return to take advantage of the low brackets if I think I'm going to be in a higher bracket in the future. Or tax planning could be I'm in a high tax bracket now, I'm going to be in a low tax bracket in the future. How can I kind of get some of this income off my tax return in a, you know, in a proper allowable way. I don't, you know, we're not talking about doing things that aren't allowed under the Internal Revenue Code. So that's kind of what we're talking about when we think of tax planning. And the framework we're going to use tonight is first, we're going to talk about tax bracket review for the various filing statuses and the tax rates for the 2026 sunset. So I'm just going to kind of give a quick overview of tax brackets. Then how we pay our taxes. So when we owe taxes to the IRS or the state, how do we pay them? There's different ways to pay them. Different methods and different ways, which I'll go over. How do we do a projection of your tax situation? How do you do a projection of your tax situation? And then lastly, some factors that might impact the income reporting on your return that you need to be aware of. And I'll call those the moving parts. So later in the show, we're going to talk about the moving parts that, you know, sometimes people don't anticipate these. And that's when folks get into trouble. So that's my favorite part to talk about. But we have to kind of lay the foundation first. So let's start with looking at tax bracket reviews, you know, reviewing the tax bracket. So the current rates under the Tax Jobs and Something Act, I've kind of forgotten, TJCA, Tax Cuts, TCJA, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, tax rates came down starting in 2018. And they are set to sunset and go back to the old system in 2026, unless there's some other, you know, changes in tax law after that or since then or before by then. Okay. So what kind of rates are we looking at? Right now, the top tax rate is 37%, and that is on income. And this is something we didn't have before. This is very interesting. $500,000 or more if you're single, $600,000 more if you're married. So that's a case where it might make more sense to be single. So even little things like that, if you're thinking about getting married, you make oodles and oodles of money, this might be one of those times where you wait to get married. Ordinarily, it was a little bit, they took away kind of the marriage penalty, but it looks like it kind of is there for the 37% tax bracket. So starting with the lowest tax bracket, and normally when we're talking about taxable income, we're talking about the income that's taxed after we have factored in our deductions, and the deductions could be itemized deductions or a standard deduction. We have the taxable income, and then we look at the tax brackets to see what's taxed. The tax rates are based on your filing status, which could be single, married filing joint, married filing separate, head of household. So I'm just first comparing just the difference between single and married. I'm not going to go over all of them. I just kind of want to give you a little framework. So the taxable income, the tax rates that apply to the taxable income after our deductions start at 10%. And then they go 12%, 22%, 24%, 32%, 35%, and 37%. So they are graduated. It is not, it's kind of layered, it's tiered, it's, I don't know how the expression to use, it's not like flat based on that income. Some people don't realize if you're in a 22% bracket, it doesn't mean you're paying 22% because some of the income is taxed at 10, some of the income's taxed at 12, and some of the income's taxed at 22. So it's not, it's, you know, graduated. Capital gains tax rates, and that's the tax rate that applies to qualified dividends. Those dividends that qualify for lower tax rate are called qualified dividends. They're outlined separately on your 1099 statements. They're taxed at 0% as well as long-term capital gains. As long as you're in the 10 to 12% tax bracket, they're going to be taxed at zero. So if you stay within the 12% bracket or lower, it's going to be at 0% taxes. They are at 15% if you're in a tax bracket 22% or higher. For folks who kind of straddle the brackets because of the capital gains or because of the qualified dividends. Some of the qualified dividends or long-term capital gains will be taxed at zero, and some will be taxed at 15%. All right. And then the top bracket, if you're in the 20 or the 37% tax bracket and you have capital gains, they would be taxed at 20%. And again, it might not be all of it. It depends. So you have to run through the tax calculations. We're already at our first break. I can't believe it. When we come back, I want to talk about the KIDI tax briefly and then what the tax brackets look like before. And then we will move on to talk about how we pay our taxes. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we're talking about tax planning, year-end tax planning before year-end. Quickly going over some of these tax brackets. The reason I want to mention them is you kind of have to have an understanding of how the tax brackets work to know what kind of tax planning might be beneficial for you. So real quickly, top bracket 37, that doesn't apply to a lot of people. Married filing joint $600,000 or more, single people $500,000 more. That's the incremental income over those brackets. The tax brackets that we had in 2017 for married folks at $470,700, it was taxed at 39.6. So we've lowered the tax brackets, or lowered the tax rates, and we've expanded the tax brackets. So we don't hit 37 until 600,000 for married filing joint. So that's a real, they really expanded the dollars in the tax brackets. More of your income is at lower rates than it used to be. All right. And then just a reminder, capital gains tax rates and qualified dividends, long-term capital gains are taxed at capital gains rates, which are zero if you're in the 12% bracket or lower, and 15% in the upper brackets. But if you're in the top bracket, they're at 20%. The KIDI tax changed from 2017. The KIDI tax now applies to children outside of the connection to the parents' return. Before, if we had a KIDI tax, so children who made over a certain amount of money of unearned income, not wages, but unearned income, they would, if it was over a certain threshold, they would, in the past, have to calculate the tax based on the parents' return. They called it the KIDI tax. What happened, you know, years and years ago, everyone started passing, you know, transferring assets to their children because the children were in the lower tax bracket. And, you know, the IRS got wise to that. Congress changed it and said, hey, you can't be shifting assets to your kids for the lower tax bracket. We're going to now have you do a calculation. And if the parents' tax rate is higher than the kids, we're going to charge you that. And it's called the KIDI tax. Well, now it's not based on the parents' rates anymore. It's based on fiduciary income tax rates. Fiduciary income tax rates are estates and trust. Those tax rates get very high, very fast. At 2,000 income under $2,550 is at 10%. 2,550 to 9,150 are taxed at 24%. 9,150 to 12,500 or 35%. And if your child has unearned income of more than 12,500, it gets taxed at 37%. You might think, well, you know, my kids don't have that kind of income. Well, if your family had been doing maybe some estate planning and thought, oh, this might be, you know, a good deal, transfer some of the assets to the kids, or the kids are beneficiaries of a trust, that could really impact them now. So we've got to be careful of the kiddie tax rates and how much unearned income our children have on investments they may have either inherited or that we pass to them. The threshold for that, they can have up to $2,100 of unearned income before that kiddie tax kicks in. So be aware of that. Let me talk to you a little bit about how we pay our taxes. And how we pay our taxes, most of us think, well, when we're working, we have withholdings from our paycheck. Our employer withholds the federal, state, and local taxes from our paycheck, and they submit them to the IRS for us, and that's very nice and very convenient. We call that withholdings. Sometimes we might have a pension, Social Security, maybe an annuity, so occasionally investments, and the custodian or trustee of those plans or retirement accounts or government agencies will withhold taxes. It depends on how much they withhold. There's forms that we file with these different entities to let them know what kind of filing status we have so they know how much to withhold based on our income. I'll talk about that in a little bit. So there's withholdings through payroll, Social Security, pensions, and occasionally, as I mentioned, investments. And it could be, generally, we only see withholdings on investments if someone hasn't completed a W-9 form for your investment account. The W-9 form tells the custodian your Social Security number and your address. And if you see withholdings on your 1099 INT, your bank statement, or your 1099 DIV, and you see federal withholdings on that, that generally means you did not complete a form W-9 for that custodian. And it's really kind of a little bit of a pain to have those withholdings on those statements, because quite often we don't see them. We forget about them. You know, they're numbers we're not expecting to have on our 1099 INT or our 1099 DIV. So if you are someone who has that, you want to check in with that custodian and say, hey, do you not have a W-9 on file for me? Because I can fill that out, and then they can stop the withholding. It's called backup withholding. So if you haven't filled out a W-9 form for whomever is, you know, paying you money and needs to withhold, that's the reason they have that. So withholdings. If you are self-employed, or you never told Social Security or your pension or the annuity company or whatever other means you get taxable income, if you've never told them to withhold taxes on the money that you're receiving, then you haven't paid into the IRS if you combined all your income is enough to cause an income tax. Then you may have to make estimated tax payments if you're not doing it through withholding. And especially for self-employed people, if you have no means of having someone withhold taxes for you, then you have to file estimated tax payments. And those are quarterly estimated tax payments that you generally make. And, you know, I'm so used to using tax software that generates quarterly estimated tax vouchers. We give them to the clients and they, you know, fill them out, write the checks, and mail them in. But there are other ways to pay your taxes. You can pay online, and there are a number of methods. And this I really don't talk about, and I probably should start paying more attention to this for clients because they might find it more useful. So the IRS offers an electronic payment option that's right for you. Paying online is convenient and secure and helps make sure we get your payments on time. This is from an IRS publication for the 1040 ES instructions. And you can use IRS Direct Pay. That's for online transfers directly from your checking or savings account at no cost to you. You can get this information on irs.gov/payments. You can pay by card. You can pay by a debit card or a credit card. And again, you go to irs.gov payments. A convenience fee is charged by those service providers. So if you do it from your checking account, there's no charge. If you do it from a debit card or a credit card, then they do charge you a fee. There's an electronic fund withdrawal. They call it EFW. It is an integrated e-file e-pay option offered when filing your federal taxes electronically using tax preparation software through a tax professional. That is called direct debit. That's what we call that. So you give us, you know, the routing number and the account number, and they can do direct debit. Usually I see people doing this for direct deposit. I don't often see people doing direct debit more than we ever did before. Younger people especially like having it done automatically. And then there's an online payment agreement, which is a little bit different. And then the IRS To Go is the mobile application of the IRS, and you can access direct pay or pay by card by downloading an application for that. So various ways to pay. What I want to talk about next when we come back from this next break is if you have the opportunity to do it through withholding, I'm going to tell you some tools to use for that. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org under local programming, Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we are talking about year-end tax planning, and we're laying the groundwork right now. And as I move toward the end, you know, the later half of the show, we're going to talk about all the moving parts and where the real planning comes into play. But we want to make sure that folks know how they're paying their taxes or the options of paying their taxes. So what I had just mentioned was from the 1040ES publication to pay estimated tax payments. You know, some of those methods of paying are also available when we file our tax return. So as taxes that we owe for the year could be paid through withholdings or through estimated tax payments. We may not have paid in enough through either of those methods, through withholdings or through estimated tax payments. And so we may be making our payments with the filing of our tax return as well, or we may make a payment with the filing of an extension if we don't have all the information to file a complete and accurate return. April 15th, we would file an extension. And if you think you owe, at that time, you send in an extra payment with that extension request. And you can do that with a check, and you can do that, you know, through electronic withdrawal as well. Again, I call that direct debit from your bank account, but the IRS calls it electronic fund withdrawal. So various ways to pay. The reason we have to be concerned about paying our taxes is there are penalties if we don't pay our taxes on time. It is a pay-as-you-go system, and the IRS likes you to pay your taxes. If you don't pay them on time, it could result in a underpayment unless you have what's called a safe harbor. Some of the safe harbors are is if you owe less than $1,000, then that's a safe harbor. If your 2019 withholding or estimated tax payments equal at least 90% of your 2019 tax liability, that's a safe harbor. But the only issue I want to call out there is it says if your 2019 withholdings or estimated tax payments equal at least 90%. Well, your withholdings are deemed to be made evenly throughout the year, no matter when you made them. That's why I love the withholdings if you have that option. If you do estimated tax payments and you say, shoot, I'm not going to give the IRS the money any sooner than I need to, I'll just make the estimate in January. Why bother with all these quarterlies? Well, because it doesn't work the same way with estimates. It's a pay-as-you-go system. The IRS wants the estimates paid quarterly. And so if you pay in 90% thinking you're going to get a safe harbor and you do it in January, and you made the money evenly throughout the year, then the IRS is going to want that money throughout the year. They're going to charge you an underpayment penalty for not paying your estimated tax payments timely. And another safe harbor is 100% of the tax shown on your 2018 tax return. So if you've at least paid in for 2019 as much as you owed in 2018, that works. If your income is more than $150,000, I think that's, I don't know if that's single or joint. I didn't write that down. But there are high income earners have to meet that safe harbor with 110% of their 2018 income. All right, so the reason we want to pay taxes is because we're supposed to pay them as we go. We can do it through withholdings or estimates. So let's talk about figuring out if we're going to owe. So let's talk for a few minutes about how do we do a projection of what we're going to owe. And the reason we want to do the projection is because that's the basis for the planning, the tax planning, the opportunities we have to, you know, kind of change our situation if we want. So generally, if you're working, you would want to look at your year-to-date pay stub, which will reflect your taxable income, your pre-tax deductions, your after-tax deductions. And generally, you're going to have a column that'll say current and then a column that says year-to-date. And so if you can annualize this, knowing how many pay periods you have left, you're going to have an idea for the year of how much income, federal taxable income, you're going to have and how much withholdings you've had in. Now, sometimes people aren't as tied in to understand what the pay stub looks like because there are a number of different kinds of wages shown on there. You're going to have gross wages, you're going to have federal wages, Medicare wages, state wages, local wages, and they may all be different numbers because we get certain deductions off of our gross wages, certain deductions off our federal, maybe add back in for our state wages. It all depends, but you may be able to figure that out. But you can kind of do this projection, current income, year to date, and then make a column for, you know, what you expect for how many pay periods times that current column, and then add that to your year to date. And that kind of gives you an idea of what it looks like for the year. But it's not just your pay stub that you have to look at. You might have other sources of income. You might have pensions, or a spouse might have a pension. You might have Social Security. So you're going to want to annualize that in those other income sources as well. The note about Social Security, though, is Social Security may not be all taxable. So Social Security gets taxed based on your how much other income you have on your return. It can be up to 85%, and it could be zero. If you don't have any other income on your return, you have Social Security, your Social Security is not going to be taxable. But if I have $100,000 of something else on my tax return, well, you're going to have 85% of your Social Security will be included in your taxable income. So the projection could be a little tricky if you have Social Security. Some or up to 85% of it might be included. So you need a good projection on that. You also want to see if you have your year-to-date capital gains and losses. If you have an investment account, I'm not talking about capital gains in your and losses in your retirement accounts. I'm talking about capital gains and losses in your individual or joint account. Those are the ones that get reported on your income tax return. For the realized gains and losses, a lot of people don't realize gains and losses on your brokerage statement aren't taxable until they're realized. You can have unrealized. Usually you'll see a column that says unrealized. That means you haven't sold anything. Realized means you did. So you want your year-to-date capital gains and losses. Maybe you had a prior year capital loss that's carrying forward. and kind of project those out for the year. Now, where you may not be able to predict all the income, but you might say to yourself, but I know I have that every year. I just am not sure what my dividends and interest are going to be. You could just use same as last year, the same as last year amounts to help you project what your current year will look like. And then, of course, you have to make notes of any expected or anticipated changes, whether there's a change in marital status, if there was a children now or children are no longer your dependents, tax credits that you may be entitled to or tax credits that you had before that you don't have available anymore. So change in circumstances. So you want to make some notes about that. And with that information, you can do a projection for the year. If in that projection you find out it looks like you're going to be a little shy on your withholdings or on your taxes and you have the opportunity to do withholdings, there is still time. We're only at September 11th. We still have time to adjust our withholdings if we need to get more taxes paid in. And I'll talk to you about how we can do that and update that when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1, it's 6:30. Your current Lehigh Valley weather, it's 90. Tonight's weather, it's going to be a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with the low around 69. Thursday, more showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with the high near 81. Thursday night, you're going to have more showers and thunderstorms with a low around 61. Friday, the same thing. We're going to have lots of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high near 71 on Friday. And for your Friday night, it's going to be low around 60. Saturday, you're going to have mostly cloudy with a high near 79. Saturday night, low around 61. And for Sunday, it's going to be mostly sunny with a high near 83. And Sunday night, low around 60. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can ask questions live on air. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and she'll bring it into the studio. And again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about year-end tax planning before year-end. So as I mentioned, you gather this information, do a projection. Quite often, software that if you're self-preparing your return and you're using software at home, quite often it will have a planning module within that software. I mean, I don't use self-prepared software myself, but I did back in the day. And back in the day, they had planning software. So I'm assuming it's still there. So you can usually enter these numbers in your planning software. Just make sure you kind of have accounted for everything, as I mentioned. So if you find that you haven't had enough taxes paid in and you may be subject to a penalty and you have income resources that can withhold taxes for you, you can change your withholdings by completing a form to let either the employer or the custodian or the government entity who's paying you this income, let them know that you need to change your withholdings. If you work and you have payroll, the form is called a W-4. So earlier you heard me mention a W-9. The W-9 is the form you complete when someone's going to pay you income and they need to know your social security number and your address and your official legal name. That's the W-9 form to give them the information to withhold taxes. The W-4 tells them how much taxes basically, well, it doesn't tell them how much taxes to withhold necessarily. It tells them information about you that will help them know how much to withhold, because an employer looks at an employer withholding table, a booklet based on how much money you're making and what pay period your employer uses to know how much to withhold. The W-4 helps you figure out how much to tell the employer to withhold by identifying your marital status. And then if you have the time, the patience, and the skill to go through these worksheets they give you, then that could help them know whether they should withhold more or if you should change your exemptions for them to withhold less. I'm not a huge fan of these worksheets. I think they're confusing to a lot of people. If you know how much you are shy of your withholdings, let's pretend it's $2,000 and we have October, November, December. Maybe you have six pay checks yet to get. What did I say? I'm going to have to make an easier number. Let's say you're $1,200 short and you have six paychecks left. Then you could just tell your employer, fill out the W-4 with your same filing status and same number of allowances. But then there's a box on the W-4 that says additional amount, if any, you want withheld from each paycheck. And you could put $200 in that. Six paychecks, $200, $1,200. Boom, you got your withholdings taken out and you have your taxes covered in that situation. You can do this also with your pension. If people have pensions, sometimes you might retire, one spouse might still be working, you're getting your pension payment, maybe your pension's $30,000. Well, someone who's making $30,000 in a pension, married, filing joint, they're barely going to withhold anything if you fill out the W-4. P is in pension. You fill out the withholding certificate for pension or annuity payments. W-4P, if you say married, filing joint, they're probably not going to withhold very much, because if it's only $30,000 and we have a standard deduction of $24,000, if they look at the withholding tables, it's going to look like you're only going to make $6,000 for the year. They might withhold, you know, for the entire year, 10%, $600. So you might find out that's not enough. Come tax time, you know, if your spouse is still working and you're in a 22% bracket, your $30,000 at a 22% bracket is more like $6,000 than $600. You're going to be very shy. So you can complete a W-4P and submit it to your employer. If you might even be able to do this online, and that's what you know, with all the technology and everything, folks can do a lot of their benefit adjustments online, and you could update your W-4P to you know, say filing status, it's not going to change. What are you going to have to do in this circumstance? Well, the W-4P also has a number that says additional amount to withhold. So if you know it's going to be $6,000 and you get paid, you know, 12 times in the year, you could just tell them $500 extra each month of your pension amount, and they'll withhold $500. So you can just use the additional amount section. So that's quite handy. I have someone who's shy on taxes because they didn't, you know, their pension is having hardly any withholdings out, but they're still working another job. And so we're updating their withholdings to kind of withhold a lot of money in the last 3 months to cover it not being done for the whole year. So when we talk about tax planning and projections, this is one of those cases where they were going to be really, really shy on their taxes paid in. And because they had only gotten the pension for a couple years last year. So, you know, the impact wasn't readily apparent. And then doing the projection, we see, oh my gosh, a whole year of pension this year plus a whole year of salary, and they owed a lot more money. So we're just adjusting the pension. It's going to be deemed to be paid in evenly throughout the year because it was done through withholding. So the pension's getting updated. And then we just have to remember in January to go update that pension extra additional amount, because it won't be the same additional amount in 2020. So we'll adjust it to something in line with for the whole year of 2020. A lot of folks don't realize that you can have withholding from Social Security, and that form is W-4V as in Victor, and that's voluntary withholding request for unemployment and certain federal government and other payments, and that's Social Security. So here we can't tell them a dollar amount. You can only select a percent, and the percents they give you And you don't get to decide. It's 7%, 10%, 12%, or 22%. So we see a lot of folks not having any withholdings on their Social Security. And they might do that, you know, maybe when they're, if they collect like at 65, and that works just fine. But then all of a sudden at age 70 and a half, when they have required minimum distributions out of their IRAs, and they throw on all that extra income on their return, all of a sudden their Social Security is taxed and they might be short on withholding. So W4V is in Victor for Social Security. You can update that at any time and ask them to increase the withholdings. Or if you were withholding and now your circumstances have changed, you can tell them that you want to stop the withholding. So you can do that through W4V. All right, so we're setting the table for what we're going to talk about. So now let's talk about the tax planning factors that might impact the income reporting on your return that you need to be aware of, and how these can help you do your tax planning. So filing status, if you've had a change in filing status, absolutely do a projection to see what your how your circumstances have changed. Sometimes people don't realize the withholdings you may have had as a single person, and now you're married and you have two spouses earning, that can shift your tax brackets in a way that you didn't consider. So change in filing status, if you're going from single to married, married to single, head of household, you have the responsibility of a child in your home, but you're not filing as married, filing joint or single. If someone passes away, that can really impact your tax bracket. So you've been filing married, filing joint all these years. Now your spouse has passed away. In the year they pass away, you can still have a married, filing joint status. But the next year, you're going to be single. If you have a spouse that has passed away and you're married, filing joint status, and maybe they only lived part of the year and, you know, maybe they were working and they're not anymore, or maybe they were collecting a big pension and maybe you don't have one now, the circumstances could really change, but that married filing joint filing status might be, more beneficial for you. And maybe you need to do some year-end planning before you're a single filing status. So we've done this sometimes with folks where we've converted IRA money to Roth IRAs. That's where we tax an IRA distribution, convert it to a Roth to get it into a Roth account where it's going to be income tax free, because we're playing maybe the lower brackets of a married filing joint status. And the next year when they go to a single status, they're going to be in a higher tax bracket. So that's one way to do that. You might have changes in income. So for example, talking about pensions and Social Security, some people don't realize how that might impact their tax return. A lot of people still think Social Security is not income taxable. So it's a big surprise when all of a sudden we're preparing the tax return and they're getting Social Security for the first time and they say, "What? I thought Social Security wasn't taxable." Well, sometimes it's not, but sometimes it is, and sometimes it is a lot. So it just depends on your circumstances. So if you've had a change in income, that's a flag for you, and that should alert you to go do some planning and projections with pensions, Social Security, because of the changing tax brackets that could cause. Change tax brackets could go down. If you go from earning a salary of, you know, $100,000 and now you're getting a pension of $25,000, very different tax brackets. So changes in income is a flag for doing projections and planning. Income reporting impacted by adjusted gross income, such as Social Security taxability or passive loss reporting. So I've talked about Social Security. Some people who have had rental properties, this doesn't apply to very many people, but we do have folks out there who are landlords, have residential rental properties. And when you have residential rental properties, sometimes in the earlier years, you will have losses because you have depreciation, you might have mortgage interest, and it will appear that you have a loss even if you have income coming in. Let's say you're netting out ahead. The depreciation can be such a big deduction that it can cause you to have a loss on your rental property. if your income is over a certain threshold, the IRS doesn't allow you to take those losses and they're suspended. So when we're looking at planning for people who have rental properties, we're watching that income. Where is that adjusted gross income? Are they going to be allowed any of the passive loss? Is it going to be capped? Because there's a cap on it. Is it going to be capped or is it going to be suspended? Because some people think they can get into rental properties as an investment property and they think they can use these losses against their income and they think it's just going to be like a win-win for them. They don't realize if their income's over a certain threshold, they can't take them. And they didn't think that through when they got into the investment property. So we want to make sure that we understand how the adjusted gross income might impact the taxation of other income on our return, or how it might limit losses that we can have. And also now with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, for 2018 forward, we have the qualified business income deduction, and that is also impacted by the adjusted gross income on your tax return. So we want to look at the income that is impacted by the adjusted gross income limitations, etc. Folks, we're at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about year-end tax planning. Setting the table for it, getting you set up for it, what kinds of things should be red flags for you as to whether or not it might be important for you to review your own tax situation, whether it's, you know, using your self-prepared software or contacting your tax preparer if you use one, or maybe even just kind of jotting it down on paper, whatever works for you. But it's the awareness to make sure. And it's not just about paying the taxes in, right? That's not what tax planning is about necessarily. It's not just about making sure you paid the taxes in. It's about taking advantage of tax brackets. And do we have tax planning opportunities where we're taxing income at a lower rate than we might have in the future, or maybe deferring taxing income from today when we're in a high bracket to a low bracket in the future. So that's tax planning. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We have just a few minutes left for that. Or you can send questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. So let me go back to some of these other items to pay attention to for your tax planning. So I mentioned passive losses from rental properties, investment properties. You know, if your income was too high, you can't take the loss. So they could be capped, or it could be that you couldn't use them because your income was too high completely. So those are suspended and they carry forward to future years. They carry forward to future years until, you know, one of a couple things happens. The suspended passive losses will carry forward until you either dispose of that rental property, that residential rental property or commercial rental property. It will stay suspended until you have a 100% disposition of that property, and then they're freed up. So that's something else to keep in mind for tax planning, that if you're someone who has these investment properties with big passive losses that have been suspended all these years, you might want to think about what that will mean to you for your tax planning. If you say, hey, I'm not going to sell those till I retire, that's my retirement money. I'm going to work till, you know, 2020, and then I'm going to retire in 2021, and that's when I'm going to sell the properties. Well, if you sell the properties in 2021, you might not have ordinary income as you did when you were working. So you kind of want to match those suspended passive losses to a period when you have high ordinary income. If I sell the properties in the year I retire and I don't have any other income, then those suspended passive losses that are now going to get freed up aren't giving me much of a tax break. So that's part of the planning. Let's talk about some pre-tax contributions that can make a difference if you're in a high tax bracket today and will be in a low tax bracket tomorrow. That's the reason you would use pre-tax contributions. Things like medical are a given. It didn't used to be, but now it's great that when we have medical taken out of our paycheck, it's a pre-tax contribution. It's not taxable. That's really wonderful. But other items that are available to us are 401k contributions. I talked about some of this last week when we talked about open enrollment. When you're making some of these elections for things like flexible spending accounts, health savings accounts, 401k contributions, maybe some people might do pre-tax contributions for, you know, your dental, your vision, certain I'm trying to think here. I don't recommend it for disability. I like those on after-tax basis if you can, because then they wouldn't be income taxable to you. But quite often the employer is paying for some of that. So we're looking for pre-tax contributions if we think we're in a high tax bracket today and might be in a low tax bracket in the future. A little caution on that is I remember when I first started preparing tax returns, the idea was always defer. This is what they said. It's always better to defer paying taxes into the future, because in the future, when you retire, you're going to be in a lower tax bracket. That was kind of the concept, the thought. Way, way back, I think Social Security wasn't taxable, and then they started making a little bit more of it taxable, and then a lot more of it taxable. So back in the day, a lot of people were in lower tax brackets when they retired, but that's not necessarily the case. Every person's circumstances are different. I would say for the majority of us, we probably are in a lower tax bracket in the future, but in some situations, people may be in a high tax bracket in the future if they have, you know, stock options or big pensions, Social Security, maybe they have annuities, things like that. So you want to be careful too when you're trying to balance your decision making between pre-tax and after-tax contributions. If you're in a low tax bracket, and this is quite often like college kids getting out of college, getting their first job, they might be in a low tax bracket, you might want to do after-tax contributions on such things as retirement accounts. And what I mean by that is if your employer offers Roth IRAs as part of the 401k, they call that a designated Roth, that might be something to think about in your planning. If all of a sudden you do your first tax return for your life and you find out you're in a, you know, 12% tax bracket, but you're on a, you know, trajectory for a, you know, a great paying job in X number of years, you might want to take advantage of things like Roth IRAs. If your employer doesn't offer the Roth, you may be able to do the after-tax piece, and that might be something to think about. That just dawned on me because I forgot. Some employers, if they're not offering a Roth, they still might do the old-fashioned after-tax. Way, way back in the day, you could do pre-tax and after-tax contributions. The idea there, why would someone do an after-tax contribution in their retirement account? Well, some people, you know, wanted to still defer the taxes as much as they could. And if they put it into their investment account, they would earn interest and dividends and pay tax on those. But if they put it on after-tax basis in their retirement account, the interest and dividends wouldn't be on their income tax return because it would be in the retirement account. But the after-tax contribution eventually could still come out and be rolled over to a Roth IRA when you retire or leave work, terminate your position, you can roll after tax dollars to a Roth IRA. Some other factors we look at with tax planning are elections. Elections such as, this is something we don't see very often, but I think is really important and it could be very relevant now that that we had the change in the tax code for the deduction of real estate taxes. I have seen where some folks will buy pieces of land for investment. They hope that they're going to grow in value. So it's not rental property. It's not residential rental property. They might not be renting the land. They're just holding literally the land for investment, for its future capital appreciation. And if you itemize deductions in the past, you could take the real estate taxes on that land as a Schedule A itemized deduction. Well, now that they cap the tax deduction to $10,000 on Schedule A, a lot of people aren't benefiting from the deduction of those taxes. There's an election, and I didn't write down the election number, but there's an election number, election you can make to capitalize the real estate taxes on your investment property. And what does that mean? Instead of taking the income tax deduction, you're going to add it to the cost basis of your land. So let's pretend I bought an acre of land for $10,000 and the taxes on that were $500 a year and I had that for 10 years. If I elect to capitalize it, then I would take the $500 times 10, which is $5,000, and add that to my cost basis. So I paid $10,000. I add $5,000 to my cost basis. I now have a cost basis of $15,000 after 10 years. If I now sell that land for $15,000, I don't have a gain or loss on it in my story. But if I had not elected to capitalize those real estate taxes, I would have had a $5,000 gain. So these are the little planning nuggets you kind of have to be somewhat aware of to make a difference on your tax return. Another election that could be made in the year someone passes away is called a 454A election to report any accrued interest on savings bonds that has not been reported, because the reason people would buy savings bonds, they earn interest, you don't pay taxes on it until you redeem the bonds. You can make an election to report the unreported interest income, the accrued interest for all those years of holding the bonds in the year someone dies on their tax return. And that's an election. And sometimes that is a big tax savings if someone passed away early in the year and they might not have any other income on their return. You can elect to put that income on the decedent's tax final tax return. And then if the beneficiary goes and cashes those savings bonds, they would ordinarily have to report all of that savings bond interest if they're the beneficiary of the bond or the estate's the beneficiary of those savings bonds. In this way, you make the election to report it on the decedent's return, and then you don't have to pick up that portion of the income. So what happens, let's pretend the accrued interest on the savings bonds was, you know, $3,000, but you took a couple months to cash it. And when you redeemed the bonds, they were now worth $3,100 of interest income. The $3,000 would be reported on the decedent's return. The $100 would be reported on either the beneficiary's return, or if the estate redeemed it, it would be reported on the estate's return. So these are really important kinds of elections, and I'm sure there's other ones out there. I'm not going to go over all of them, but it's just awareness. Also, the difference for standard deduction versus itemizing. That is something you have to think about in your tax planning. People thought, you know, oh, I'm going to itemize. That's pretty much gone by the wayside for a whole lot of people. They're using the standard deduction. You have to understand how that impacts your tax planning. And also whether or not it makes sense to change that each year. Maybe you have super high medical. Someone might have gone into a nursing home and you have super high medical now. Well, if you have you know, $100,000 of nursing care expenses and, you know, grandpa has a huge IRA, that might be a planning opportunity because you are going to get maybe that Schedule A itemized deduction and maybe you could put a little income on his return, convert it to a Roth IRA or something like that. Charitable giving as well has lots and lots of opportunities, and I've talked about that on lots of shows, and those shows are on WDIY.org under local programming, your financial choices, because I'm running out of time, folks. I know it sounds complicated. I certainly, my husband always tells me I get a lot into details. I love details, but I think if people kind of understand what they have to pay attention to, what are the red flags, you know, 1 week you listen and it might apply, another week it might not apply, but then 3 months from now, all of a sudden something's going to happen in your life and you're going to go, oh my gosh, that's right, this means something. So it's about kind of having that awareness and paying attention, and it can make a difference. And what difference does it make? We hate talking about money, but you know what? If it gives you more time with your family because you can retire earlier, it's worth it. If you can do that gift for your child or help put your kid in college and help pay for that because you were paying attention to your, you know, financial situation, that's when it makes a difference. It gives us options, it gives us opportunities, and that's why we have to pay attention to it. I want to thank our listeners. I want to thank Shandi for being here, Lori C. for being here. Next week, we have members of the Chamber of Commerce, Women's Business Council, Darlene Poors, and Carla Hickey. They're going to join me to discuss opportunities and ways to get involved with the organization, the benefits of doing so, and some of their events. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.